The next one is called cup stuffing. Does anybody have any idea what cup stuffing might mean?
No.
Have you ever had a day when your cup is totally full, like you had a flat tire, you got people at work that were terrible, you know, you got yelled at, the jerk almost cut you off on the road. You get home and your cup is full, like overwhelming, and you get home. Well, Kristen used to work with at-risk kids, and so she'd have kids that definitely pushed your envelope, and then she had the administration that said, they hired her and said, we'll give you free rein to do however you want to do it, but you have to punish them. So she'd come home slightly stressed out, and I would have had a stressful day, and I'd go running in to try to tell her about my day. What chance do you think I would have of being heard at all?
Very little. Mm-hmm.
Her cup was what?
Full.
Exactly. So cup stuffing is trying to put more into a cup that's already full. If you could picture a soda bottle shook up and you open up the top, what are the chances of getting anything in there? What you have to do is empty the cup out first before you try to put anything in. So if Kristen has had a full day and I want her to actually hear me, what I have to do is go in and go, honey, can you hear me now? And she goes, no, my cup is full. I go, okay, would you like me to listen? Because as I listen to her and really hear her at a deep empathetic level, it empties her cup. And then all of a sudden there's room for her to hear me. Or the other side is when I work a lot on the computer, so I'll have 10 different windows open. I've got projects going on. I'm trying to juggle them from one window to the other and get everything done. And she'll come in and ask me a question. And she'll look at me, and she'll see my eyes go crossed. And she'll go, oh, cup full? I go, uh-huh, cup full. Come back in 20 minutes. And we don't take it personal. It's code for us. So what I want you to think about, how many times have you had your cup full and somebody tries to come and give you more?
Yeah.
Would it be useful to have that kind of code in your relationship so that you could lovingly just say, cup full, and the other person knows it's just a waste of time to do any more talking right now. Oh, cup full, you want me to, are you going to go for a walk or you want me to listen to you? And so what is the price you pay for trying to stuff a full cup?
You create anger,
upset, not being listened to.
Yeah.
Overwhelm.
Frustration.
And how many of you have tried to stuff a full cup?
Yeah.
Any of you?
Oh, yeah.
So now what I want you to do, though, is just, if you have the picture, oh, that's a full cup. This is not personal. She doesn't hate me, you know, all that. You know, oh, her cup is full right now. What can we do to empty the cup? If I want to be heard, if that's my responsibility to make sure the cup is somewhat empty before I try to stuff anything else in it.
And listening with the empathy is how you empty the cup?
That's one way of emptying the cup. I want to be careful of saying, like, there's only one way to do everything.
Right.
Like, this is the right way to communicate. Sometimes going for a walk. When I teach at the prison, I come home and my cup is pretty full. Because it's a lot of stress from just being in that environment and the amount of pain that these people are in. So what I would often do is I would stop and kayak before I got home, and that was a way of me emptying my cup and taking care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not my partner's responsibility to empty my cup.
Mm-hmm.
It's my responsibility, but as part of that, I can make a request to her. Would you be willing to listen to me for 10 minutes and just, I'm overwhelmed by what I heard today. You know, the stories and stuff. Or would you be willing, just let me go for a walk or watch TV? You know, I know for Kristen, watching the news is one way that she empties her cup. And if I try to interrupt that, it's not a good thing.
What are some of the signs of, I mean, I know when I get a certain look or something. The story that I hear in my head is that something's going on, but I'm trying to think of ways that I could identify when my partner's cup is full. Or is
I would think any time they get really short and snitty,
okay,
there's something going on, and it's probably not you. It's probably something that their cup is full.
Okay.
And it would help to stop and give them some empathy for what's going on for them before you try to approach anything new. So
okay.
I know, yeah, snittiness, that glazed over look in their eye.
Twitchiness, they can't sit still, they're anxious, they want to get up and move.
Or if I tell Paul something and I get absolutely no response, as though I just talked to a wall, and then I have to figure, well, there's so much going on inside of him, he can't hear me right now.
What you might want to do, though, is lay these things out in advance with your partner so it's not in the middle of an upset that you're dealing with it. It's when you're both calm and you go, let's talk about this cup stuffing thing. Let's talk about message assuming. How can we set this up so that before we get in the middle of an upset, we've got code and signal? Kristen can give me code, and like cup full, that says volumes for me.
Mm-hmm.
So and you're going to ponder these.
I have a question.
Okay.
Sorry. I thought I heard you say two sort of opposite things. I took notes, and I have one statement where you said, if I want to be heard, it's my responsibility to empty their cup first.
Right.
And then you also said, it's not their responsibility to empty. Oh, I get it. It's never the other person's responsibility to empty your cup. It's always my responsibility. In other words, if I want the other person to hear me, it's my responsibility to go and then ask questions to help them empty their cup. And it's also my responsibility to take care of my own cup and empty. Is that right? Because then you then said, take responsibility for my own cup being full. It's not their responsibility. So they sort of sound opposing, but I think I get that it's always about taking self-responsibility.
But then who has control? You have control. Otherwise, you're a victim in the relationship.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, right. So you got it. That's it.
Okay. So in the asking of my question, I answered it.
You're good. Or we're good, huh?
So, thank you.
Yes, I'm sure that's it.
And what's going to happen, thank you. There's a term called the reticular activating system, and basically that's your internal radar. And what we're doing is we're tuning it up. Say that you're a chiropractor, and you're sitting in a restaurant, and three tables away, somebody says something about their back's out, or they need an adjustment, or there's a chiropractor meeting. And your brain, that little radar, will go beep, 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 beep. Pay attention here. This is something that's important to me. It filters out most of the stuff, and it lets in a few things that you've told yourself that are important. What we're doing on this first call is helping tune your reticular activating system so over the next week, when you make these mistakes, now I'm not expecting over the next week you're not going to make them, but all of a sudden you're going to go, oh, wow, cool, I just did case building. Oh, honey, I just told the coolest story about you. You were evil. I just tried to do cup stuffing or message assuming, and take notes so that next week we're going to start out with sort of all the great mistakes we made over the week. Is that okay with everybody?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're going to go on to mistake number 5.
Shall I do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mistake number 5 is fixing, fighting, and fleeing. And I like to say that problems like to be fixed, but humans don't.
Mm-hmm.
People just don't like to be fixed. So no matter when somebody comes to you with a problem, don't jump right to fixing them. The first thing to do is to give them empathy. And, of course, that's the process we'll teach next week. But the giving the empathy, a lot of times that's all they need. They don't really want advice. So the fixing, fighting, and fleeing, that's really a progression that happens when people come to us with problems. And I can think of a time when my daughter came to me with something at school. I think it was like the girls were picking on her or something. And, of course, as a mom, the first thing you want to do is fix your kid's problems. So I told her, I gave her my motherly advice, which probably didn't sit well anyways. She probably just wanted empathy. But here I am. I give her advice. And then I hear her again complaining about the same situation, and I ask her if she didn't do what I told her to do, and she said, well, no. And again, I didn't give the poor kid any empathy for what her actual situation was and what she was actually feeling. All I was doing was trying to give her what mom thought was the best way to handle this situation. Well, fighting is the next progression after fixing doesn't work. So when Dulali is my daughter, when Dulali wouldn't listen to me, after a while I got to where I was like yelling at her over the situation. So this poor kid, now she's got the girls at school picking on her, and I'm yelling at her at home. Great mom. And then the last step that we always do is fleeing. I think I finally got to the point where it was like, well, fine then. If you're not going to take my advice, I refuse to talk to you about this anymore. And you flee. Shut down that way or physically flee the room. But you can, if you think about arguments you've had with your beloveds, the first thing you want to do is fix them. And when they don't listen to that, you'll fight with them about it. And when that doesn't work, you finally get to where you just say, I'm out of here. Or, you know, you turn your shoulder and you're out emotionally. So that's fixing, fighting, and fleeing.
The rule here is empathy before education. And I call it male-itis. Now, Kristen argues with me that women do it too, and I definitely can agree with her. It's just it's a masculine energy of let me fix that. Let me give you some advice. You know, she would come home from work, and she'd be in upset about dealing with the kids and stuff, and I'm like, did you try this? Did you do that? This would be cup stuffing. Offering advice when somebody's cup is full is definitely cup stuffing. And what you might do, and I do this with Kristen because I want to contribute. The fixing comes from a place of wanting to give and contribute. And I will ask, though, I'll go, honey, can you hear me now? Would you enjoy some ideas? We go skiing together, and I go, do you want me to help you? And it's like, no. Okay. And I have to go, I am contributing to her in a different way by just being with her rather than, and I was a ski instructor by the time I was 15. I was on the hot dog ski circuit. So I'm like, I have all of this to give, and I almost have to, like, get a muzzle to be able to ski with her and keep my mouth shut. And know that that's what she wants. If I'm giving to her the best gift I can give by not trying to fix her. So how many of you have ever had fixitis?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And how do you like to be fixed?
No.
So I'd like to hear some examples from people, just a little participation here about maybe one time when you either were, somebody tried to fix you and you rebelled, or you tried to fix somebody and they rebelled. Anybody got an example of that?
Can you tell me first, the rule is empathy before what?
Education.
Education.
And education is any sort of offering of advice. You know, like Kristen said she did with her daughter, what I did with her. It's, you know,
right.
Before I offer advice, I always want to check in and see where they are. And I also want to see part of what the whole advice-giving thing is if somebody is in pain and we're not okay with being with people who are in pain, it makes us uncomfortable. So what we're trying to do by fixing them is suppress their pain and therefore relieve us. This is why you might want to listen to the recordings a couple of times to, like, let all of this in. There's a lot to absorb here. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So anybody have an example of fixing?
I think it's a natural tendency.
I do.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That's all right.
It's Beth, and I
well, it's exactly what you're just talking about. Oops, I'm not sure who's going in. exactly what you're talking about. My partner recently had a dear friend diagnosed with cancer, and he's been quite beside himself about it, and I come in and try to talk about being hopeful, not fearful, and statistics are just statistics. You know, I think I'm being helpful. I think I'm offering good advice, and I'm doing exactly what you're talking about. I'm trying to cheer him up, and you're helping me see that I am uncomfortable with seeing him in pain.
Right. And this is
don't want him to spend, you know, a lot of time wallowing there. And he's told me point blank, you know, could you just shut up and be with me for?
Yeah. Oh God.
And stop trying to talk me out of my feelings.
So let's just take a second and be with what she just said.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for saying that. It really, it's a real growth process. When my dad was dying, he died of asbestosis, which is a hardening of the arteries of the lung. And it really took me a long time to be able to just be with him and not try to offer hope or suggestions or anything, but to just be. And what an incredible, precious, precious gift that is. And people go through it a lot quicker. If you ever look at a kid, they fully express their emotions and are done with them in a second. Us adults, we get smart and we suppress our emotions, and they show up as cancer, as disease, as upsets, because we sit on it for years. Because it's not okay to be fully present in that pain or upset or disappointment or fear. And that is what I was talking about earlier about being really intimate. That's the highest form of intimacy, is to just be with someone. So I thank you for bringing that example up.